Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. This is Tony, and you're listening to Comic Conversations, episode 229, where we talk all things comics for the week of February 6th, 2019. And as always, I'm joined by co-host Alex. Alex, how are you doing today?
Like all Elite Wrestling announcements, I am a disappointment.
Oh, wait, who are you a disappointment to?
I don't know, the people, the fans of the show.
I think they've come to expect you in what you deliver here, so I don't see how they're
I'm going to be a huge disappointment this week because I liked a lot of books, and I'm told that I'm better when I'm trashing things.
Oh, okay. Now, I'll say this much. While I didn't openly hate anything, there were a couple books where I'm like, I don't know what's going on.
Well, yeah, there was one book I didn't know of.
Yeah, I know. You're going to go to great lengths
to point that out. Took you to task for that, motherfucker.
Yeah, I know. Have fun with that. All right, with that out of the way, let's go into our first segment this week.
This week's book.
Or actually, news. I just played the wrong song. Sorry, Alex.
It's okay. We'll flip it.
Yeah, there you go. Let me play the real version of that song. There we go. That's the real version.
Do you remember when this song was used for, like,
everything?
All kinds of fucking internet videos?
Yeah, it was the, everybody had their fun with the Giles theme that fits to everything. But then there was a point where this was a meme.
Mm-hmm. I remember that when I was trying to pick a and I'm like, what fucking have we not used? And I go, oh, Kirby. And then I remembered why they used that. It was the catchiest Kirby song.
I think it was either that song or another Kirby song where they said it synced up perfectly with a Beyonce video. You have to go watch it later.
I will watch it.
It's times like this. I wish we did a video podcast so I could just make it part of the podcast. But
you could make this
spicy.
You could make this a video. Oh, I'm watching it right now.
It works, doesn't it?
Oh, I watched Botchamania, and I didn't realize Alicia Fox did the. What's the fox say, dance?
Yeah, I told you, and as always, you don't listen, so.
Yeah. But I saw it on Botchamania, so I'm like, aw. And then I'm like, you know, what was the deal with that song? And apparently they were a comedy group. So.
Oh. Yeah, that song was more famous than anything they probably ever done and will ever do.
Well, I thought maybe, like, oh, and I saw the most bizarre thing when I typed it in on YouTube. I came up, it was like the fucking... one of the morning shows, the one where they have bands occasionally outside, and it was like grown women and then children dancing and singing along to them performing this song live, and there were like grown men too. It was the weirdest fucking thing I've ever seen. It's like a 60-year-old woman singing along to this song, and I'm like, what the are they plants? Like what?
Oh, I heard a song earlier today. Apparently, it's pretty famous in Italy. Where it was a rock and roll song done by, I presume, Italians. It's supposed to be a song in English, but none of them know English.
That's awesome. I've heard that before. Not that song, but I've heard bands do that, usually from Japan.
And the thing is, okay, it doesn't mean anything, but the inflections and the sounds do sound like English.
Well, because I'm sure they've heard a lot of English songs.
Yeah, but the thing is, you'd expect it to sound nothing like English, because, well, you know, when people make fun of other languages, you know, you don't know how close it is to the real language, so when you finally hear it in English, it's like, you know, it's not that far off.
Well, but if you, like, listen to, like, I don't know, like, 1980s Mexican arena rock, which was different from American... Mm-hmm. 1980s arena rock, like you could probably copy it, like you could just by like you don't know the words, but you know how they sing, so you could do it.
Ah.
So I imagine it's just like, well, you should know about that, dude, because you're a Mexican.
Yes.
Fucking Tony's rocking out to his Manah records and shit.
Of course. You've exposed me.
As big as El Santa.
In fact, that was my, before you let the cat out of the bag, that was going to be my pick for this week's comics theme.
Oh, fuck. I'm next week or next 2 weeks when I have a pick, I'm now going to pick a song from them. And it'll probably be live, too.
Excellent. All right. As always, there's nothing gigantic news-wise, at least in my opinion, so I am going to forego my pick for news topics, but I know Alex always wants to put the segment over because he likes having music. So, Alex, by all means, what do you have for us this week?
James Rochelle died, and he was only 49. And James Rochelle, I would forgive people for not knowing because he was a colorist. And yeah, but he was a colorist back when they didn't just do stuff with computers. Although he eventually did work.
Even when it comes to comic books, like, it's not an inker, but they're pretty low on the totem pole.
But they are important. Like, I was friends with a comic colorist for years, and I met him on CBR. They're very important. And, like, it's not often you look at a comic and you're like, oh, that would be better with better coloring. Like, you don't often say that, but if you took it away, you would notice. And they do very much add to it.
I think of that one comic book meme where, you know, they show, like in the 90s, where it's a big line for a comic book artist and then a smaller line, significantly smaller line for the comic book writer. And someone comments, oh, I always thought computers wrote all the comic books. And then they cut to nowadays where it's vice versa, where you have the big line for the writer and the significantly smaller line for the artist.
Hmm. Well,
well, James the reason why I bring that up is because, you know, in comic books, it's either the writer's the biggest deal, and then a significant step below, but still kind of marginal, is or significant is the artist.
Well, in the 90s, that was flipped, though. Yeah. So it came around. No, but he was one of the staff Wildstorm guys when Image split into the different studios, and like people worked out of the studio. Like, they would go to work at Wildstorm. He was one of the guys who did that. Like, he was the first colorist on Gen 13.
Such simple times.
Yeah, and then he went, I mean, he still did, like, fill-ins for Marvel and stuff, but he apparently went to work in video games. He did texture work. So he was actually working in video games. And then he, when CrossGen started, he got hired there. So he probably made a shit ton of money for a very short period of time, since that's what CrossGen was famous for. And, you know, then he just worked off and on, but he worked for Sony Entertainment Online.
There you go.
So maybe he did work for EverQuest.
Yes, and if it sounds like, you know, Alex is just showing off when, you know, when in fact I fully know this and most comic book readers know this. No, I didn't know who this was, so this is a learning experience for the listener as well as myself.
I had to look up all the video game stuff because I didn't know what he'd done recently.
Cool. All right, and what are the news story you said you had?
Oh, this is not really a news story, but Marvel thought it was. Marvel announced that they're, for Free Comic Book Day, they're doing a Spider-Man Venom thing. And it's going to herald a shocking new direction for the Spider-Man titles. And it mentioned Into the Spider-Verse. So I don't know what shocking new direction they could have if it's like alternate reality stuff, because they've already done that to death.
Well, the thing is that Spider-Man movie was fairly successful, so they're probably going to capitalize with another comic book.
And it's not being written by Spencer either. So
here's the thing that shocks me about that. We're in February and they're already talking about Free Comic Book Day.
Well, they do that because
is like maybe a month out they'll promote what's going to come out Free Comic Book Day.
Well, they said the Venom story is, quote, the most dramatic story in all of Free Comic Book Day history.
Yeah, I doubt that very much.
I do too. Well, I don't actually, because Free Comic Book Day is often like Marvel and DC will like do, you know, a half issue of this is a lead in to our next big event, but really nothing ever happens in these comics. So,
yeah, I know, but it's surprising, like, considering the massive decline of the comic book store, that Free Comic Book Day is still a big deal.
Oh, God, my friend who owns a comic book shop, they fucking rake cash in on Free Comic Book Day. That's like, they do their mystery boxes, and they can't fucking keep them in stock, like, every year, because what they'll do is they have different... They have, like, I think a $25 box and a $50 box. And it's got, like, fucking trades that they have too many of, and then, you know, random
tchotchkes. See, that's why I would never spend money on that, because it's like, well, why am I going to waste money on something that I don't necessarily want?
Well, I do, because I love mystery boxes, first of all.
Oh, that's right. Remember, 2 years ago, 3 years? Maybe I'm dating myself here. Maybe even 5 years ago when Loot Crate was, like, the biggest thing ever.
And it's still around, and there's a million of them now. But I keep saying I'm going to resubscribe to Loot Crate.
Yeah, but you never do.
Because I don't, but I should, because I like getting stuff that I don't expect. Actually, the problem with Loot Crate was I realized the only things I liked was the t-shirts. And did then they eventually fit?
I heard a common criticism was the t-shirts did not fit.
They fit.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I still have a bunch of them.
All right. Remember what they used to do with in the comic book? And then when you would see, like, we would go towards the monthly comic books and always would be number one with an asterisk would be something that got Loot Crated.
Because Loot Crate had to buy all the comics.
Exactly. Yeah.
That was good.
It was a deal for a while. Okay. I'm not... Well, I guess it's refreshing to know that Free Comic Book Day is still a thing.
Well, yeah. Well, oh... Yeah, so anyway, I was telling that story about my friend. So he, they do these things, and they're 25 or they're 50 bucks. And every year they've increased the number they had, and every year they've sold every fucking one of them. And I've asked, like, cause they're an hour away from me. So I've asked, like, hey, can you hold one for me? And they're like, we actually can't. Like, we can't hold one because there's too much demand.
That's gotta be great if you have a comic book store, cause it's like, here's stuff that you will otherwise normally never sell. But
yeah, you can get rid of stock because
you get a bunch of filthy casuals coming in.
Well, the other comic book store back in town, well, there's like five of them in my home area, but the other one, the big one, they have a bigger store, so they don't do any of that shit because they have enough space for all their inventory, but they do a nice setup. Like, they have people fucking come in with the costumes, and they'll get a comic writer or artist of some small renown to come in and sign from, you know, usually they grab them from Chicago.
Yeah, well,
and
it's the reason, the downside of probably living in Iowa, you probably never get anybody big, because I've been in Los Angeles, I get everybody.
Had Peter David 1 year.
Ooh, nice.
That was cool. I had him sign, Young Justice, actually. Young Justice number one.
Nice. You should have got a printout or a glossy photo of X-Factor.
Oh, I had him sign that, and I had him sign the issue of Aquaman where he got his hand bit off.
No,
by
I don't mean the comic book X-Factor. I mean...
He hadn't written that yet.
No, I mean,
no, he
had. A picture of Albert, X-Pac, and just incredible.
Well... I got everything I ever wanted,
and I'm not going to give it back to Peter David. Did
I
tell you I'm shocked that no one on the indie scene has ever done anything with the X-Factor name?
Didn't King of Trios have X-Factor once?
No, believe me, I'd be all Did over that. No,
I know they had X-Pac.
The thing is, if they were entered in the King of Trios, they would have to win because they'd be the most over group.
You know what? They couldn't have gotten Albert. That would have been the problem with it because they get just incredible and.
Well, you know, they just ask when he's off from his shift at Olive Garden.
Isn't he in jail now or something?
I believe so. I'm sure he did not have a good post-wrestling career.
I wonder if X-Pac talked about that on his podcast or if he even associates with him anymore. Poor Justin. You know, I feel really bad for Justin Credible because ECW pushed him really hard.
Yeah.
And he was very average. So, like, he couldn't live up to the push.
Oh, here's a funny story that I've told Alex off the show. But I went to college with the co-host of X-Pac's podcast.
He's got like three co-hosts, by the way.
Yeah, I know, so. But one of them I went to college with. So I've more than one occasion, she's like, oh, okay, we need topic suggestions. And I always say, X Factor Reunion.
Bring it back. Get Uncle Cracker's not doing anything.
And Xbox friendly with the company. Why can't they do it?
I don't know. Because I don't think it would be over. And Justin Credible had all the drug issues. And Albert's busy down in NXT now.
Yeah, but you can't do it over the phone.
What would that do? Oh, like on the show?
Yeah, just be like,
no,
oh,
I want to see him wrestle.
What's that?
I want to see him wrestle. I got to find out
really?
If 2K19 lets you put music in so I can reform X Factor or be in a new X Factor. It's like me, Johnny Gargano, and then someone everyone hates because it's X Factor.
Roman Reigns.
No, not really, because he has cancer.
Allegedly.
Fake cancer. Who the fuck is that? Dolph Ziggler. You fucking Dolph Ziggler there, Big Show.
There you go, make it so. All right, that's going to do it for the news portion of the show. Let's move on to our next segment, this week's books.
I can see our fingers all intertwined with all your wrinkles perfectly suited in mind. Oh, somewhere down.
Hello, goodbye, find something new to do, new song. Alex, are you going to give us a little history lesson of this obscure indie band, No Doubt?
They're not that obscure. Well, I guess they are. I mean, they were American. But they came from Cali. Ooh. Your area, and they were signed to Drive Thru Records, so very indie, because Drive Thru had a bunch of fucking indie bands that became big later, but they would have came out around 2003, I think. I can't remember. I saw them live once. They were opening for Paramore. I don't know what made me decide I needed to go see Paramore.
Probably drugs.
But, Well,
it's funny how you don't dismiss it.
I have a thing for chick singers. I like chick singers.
Yeah, you
so will. I will often like chick rock bands.
Because you're a chick?
Even if I shouldn't. Because I'm a chick.
Yes.
I don't know. I just like, I think women tend to have more variety in their voices.
It's true. I'll give you that.
Yeah. So, and I told you I was giving out about Beyonce the other day because she's an incredible singer, but she dicks around too much.
Hot dogs and grandstands?
Yeah, with a and it's like, just because you can fucking do vibrato and you can change the tone of your voice like that, it's very impressive. But you don't have to do it at the end of every fucking line. It's annoying. I hate it. So that, I'm more of like an Annie Lennox guy, but.
I was trying to find that one clip of, Beyonce going, womp, 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 womp.
And as a side note though, liking chick rock bands, I always hated No Doubt and Gwen Stefani.
Oh, they're from my neck of the woods.
Gwen Stefani wrote, what I believe is one of the worst songs ever written.
You're just upset because you don't know what a Holla Back Girl is.
No, I hate that song. So it's like the worst. It's annoying and stupid. Oh God,
I won't have you speak ill of someone that came from the SCU.
What? Yes, I can. What do you care?
No, I just wanted an excuse to say SCU.
like that. Like, yeah. Stark 209.
Well, that's their gimmick. They go, SCU.
God, I fucking every time we have a delivery that goes to Stockton. Every time a guy's like, where's this delivering? I fucking every time I just go, it's going to Stock 209. What? And then they'll be like, what?
Because here's the thing. Even if they're MMA fans, they don't get
the
reference.
They don't know that.
So.
You can go down there, go to Caesar Grace Jiu-Jitsu.
Just don't touch my fucking Sega Genesis.
Find some guy, steal his bike, fucking Sega Genesis. NHL 94.
I'd like to shout out to February. Sans from Undertale. Simon Belmont. The letter Q.
Kirby. Pepperoni Pizza.
Samurai Pizza Cats will be in the best cartoon.
Fucking Samurai Pizza Cats, best cartoon.
All right, with that out of the way, let's go into this week's books, which include Uncanny X-Men 16, The Immortal Hulk 13, Daredevil 1, Marvel's X-Men 1, Gunhawk 1, Conan 3, Walking Dead 188, Dreaming 6, Young Justice 2, Green Lantern 3, and to open up this week's books, we have from DC Comics, Batman 64, writer Joshua Williamson, art by Colin March.
Ooh, you're opening up with Batman.
Yeah, well, it wasn't a particularly big issue of Batman, so.
It kind of was. It started a new storyline that ties into one of their,
Yeah, but it wasn't written by King, so.
Their crossovers. No, but it was good. What they're trying to say, first of all, they tell you up front, this takes place before the last five issues of Batman.
I wish Doomsday Clock would do that.
And it would tell us when this takes place. Well, Doomsday Clock, we somewhat realized, is taking place after.
That's your prevailing theory, but we don't know for sure.
Well, because they showed that in Heroes in Crisis, people are starting to not trust the superheroes.
And then,
because of what happened at Sanctuary.
And then all Bendis books take place in their own pocket universe.
Well, Bendis only writes Action Comics. Like, he doesn't even write Naomi, I found out.
No, he doesn't?
Well, he might have written the first issue, but he had a co-writer.
So is it one of those dealies where it's like Neil Gaiman in the Sandman books?
Yeah, but they never pretended Neil Gaiman was writing the Sandman books.
Oh, okay.
It was like Warren Ellis with the Wildstorm thing. He's writing one of the books, but they didn't pretend he wrote the other books. They told you up front. So, but in this one, Batman's fighting with the Justice League and he's kind of losing his shit, which I don't like that Batman does that, but it does humanize him somewhat, I guess, because he feels a great deal of guilt that this thing happened at Sanctuary. And as they pointed out, Batman was the one who kind of spearheaded the whole idea. And, you know, these people died and he hasn't been able to solve the murder. So he's like hallucinating a little bit.
Yeah, because Barry will be doing stuff and then they'll cut to Batman vision and it'll be Flash will be Wally.
Yeah, or like Superman was talking to him and he sees Commander Steel and like shit like that. Like he's not reacting to this well. And as he's flying away, because he hasn't slept for like 3 days, he stops at the Flash Museum and it's being attacked. And it's apparently being attacked by Gotham Girl, because someone is influencing her. And I don't know how that's going to tie in, but Barry shows up and Barry's like telling him, you know, you got to keep things cool. We'll figure this out, blah, blah, blah. But Barry is also not happy about what happened, obviously. They also, as a side note in this, they revealed that we're apparently back to pre-New 52 continuity because they showed Batman and Flash on a team-up with Wally as Kid Flash and Robin, which would not have happened in the New 52. That's not a big deal.
Yeah, but the thing is, ever since Rebirth came around, they've been fast and loose with the continuity.
They have. But I just felt like pointing it out, because... And that would have been Dick Robin.
For those of you who think you know Grayson...
You don't know Dick. And Tom King wrote that, didn't he?
What's that?
Did Tom King write that?
Yeah. In fact, that's one of the things I was recommending we read, because we read Omega Men. And even the people that like King and put him over nobody really puts over Omega Man, whereas for the most part, his Grayson
put over, actually.
Is well thought of, at least.
Yeah, maybe I should read it sometime.
If we ever have a slow week again, we could always go and read the first trade.
I wish Tom King would write The Authority. Yeah, but
you want Tom King to write
this,
every book, though, to be fair.
So this was, but this was just this was the start of a storyline. It's going to be Batman and Flash going after who is behind this all, but more going after Gotham Girl, who it was revealed doesn't care that using her powers will kill her. She has her dead brother hooked up to creepy machine.
It looked like it was full of venom.
Yes, but I don't know if it was. Venom wouldn't bring you back to life.
Well, she doesn't know that.
She's balls crazy, as we found out. So he's trying to bring her back to life. So we'll see how that goes. So it's interesting because Williamson is writing this, but it's dealing with two Tom King stories.
You know the way King writes, I think. Because the thing is, he hasn't done much with it, and we knew like the first five issues of his Batman run were supposed to set up that Night of the Monster Men. So I wonder how much of that was like done with foresight, whereas like, okay, I know Joshua Williamson's going to do something with the button, and then he's going to do some storyline with Gotham and Gotham Girl. So I'll set it up for him, even though later on my run,
no,
I have nothing to do with
Gotham and Gotham Girl was his first storyline.
Yeah, but that could have been just setting something up for Williamson, because we already knew we were getting something down the road, because they were already soliciting the button.
But they hadn't, they didn't, when he started Batman, there was no Heroes in Crisis.
So, considering we've had no follow-up to Thomas Wayne showing up, are we to assume that was part of the Scarecrow hallucinogen dream?
I believe so.
Okay, because we never got a follow-up with that, and it's been, what, a month or so?
No, but none of the issues have followed up on any of the other issues until the last one, when they sort of revealed what was going on.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
The storyline is called Nightmares, by the way, so.
Did Snyder ever have to do this?
Cut his run for
other people?
Probably, I imagine.
Morrison?
Morrison didn't. Morrison was left in his own world.
Okay. All right. Since I brought Morrison, let's talk his book, Green Lantern number 4. Obviously, writer Grant Morrison, artist Liam Sharp.
Well, as I pointed out last time, Green Lantern murdering a guy, came back on him. But that didn't happen until the end of the issue. The Black Stars. Okay. So I'm trying to think about it. So this book opens up, and there's a guy with four arms who looks like Clint Eastwood. Man with no name, Clint Eastwood, is talking to one of the Black Stars. He's talking to him, and they're talking about, he's telling a story about the Green Lanterns fighting the Sun Eater, and she's telling a story about, the leader of her group, which, spoilers, in the end, it turns out she is the leader. She's telling a story about how she ate a planet, basically.
For once.
Did horrible things to it and then ate the planet. So they're telling their two stories, and the Green Lantern story is actually kinda cool. Like there's this star eater, and it's gonna eat this star, destroy this planet. So the Green Lanterns call in the Green Lantern, who is a artificial sun.
Cause of course, right?
Yeah, and they drop hints on this. It's like, oh, and he killed the thing? He's like, no, they didn't kill it. They put it in it's got a dark dimension thing, like a holding place. The Green Lanterns, they really don't kill that often. It's a last resort, which they're reminding you of what Hal did in the last issue. And at the point when they beat it, there's two other Green Lanterns, Volcano Head guy and another one, are like, yeah, so the Guardian sent us to, like, bring you back because of what you did. so you should probably come with us. And, you know, he puts it, he's like, Guardians are immortal, so they can wait, whatever. And, but this is all being told as like a story in the past and stuff. So he goes to Wa and they slap him down basically.
Yep.
Like they're like, you can't fucking kill people. They're like, the only way you kill someone is if we authorize lethal force, and we didn't do it, and you murdered him. And by the way, we were almost done with a deal with them where we would have ended slavery in the entire fucking area of space. Oops. And by you murdering him, you fucking ruined that. And, you know, we cut back and, the chick reveals she is the head of the bad guys, and then reveals that she knows this four-armed Clint Eastwood fellow is actually Hal Jordan in disguise. So they set up a fight in the next issue, because they're gonna fight.
Gonna fight, gonna fight. Head bust him, head bust him.
Break his neck.
Hit him with the left. Hit him with the right.
So it was good. I mean, he got to tell some very good art in this book, by the way.
Yeah. Liam Sharp is the person you want to put
over. But I mean, he's been good. I'm not saying suddenly in this issue the art was good. I'm just saying that the art was good in general.
Yeah.
Because he gets to draw all kinds of fun stuff.
Well, especially with the way Morrison writes, yeah, he gets to write a bunch of wacky stuff. Like,
Green Lantern with
a volcano for a head again.
Yeah, or the fucking, the bug people the book opens with. Like, he gets to draw so much fun shit. He's gotta love it. I don't know, you imagine if you're an artist and you work in superhero books, you'd like drawing something like this, because there's constant variety.
Yeah, and I like it. I imagine Morrison has some stuff plotted out. Like, the guy with the volcano, the head that screams
Morrison. I'm sure he said, okay, this Green Lantern has a volcano for it.
But then I'm sure most of the other aliens, he's just like, draw whatever wacky aliens you want.
Well, he's like, yeah, make them bug monsters. And he's like, okay. So he got to draw whatever he wanted. It'd be fun.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, and since we brought him up earlier, let's talk Young Justice number 2, writer Brian Michael Bendis, art by Patrick Leeson.
So this was two stories. It was the current story, and then they gave some background on Wonder Girl.
What is the secret of her powers?
She's Zeus's granddaughter.
Wow.
That's the secret of her powers. But let's just go through that part first to get it out of the way. So Zeus appears to her after she fights the Sparrow? I can't remember who she was fighting. She fought a supervillain beat him.
Some third, you know, some D-list supervillain.
I think it was the Sparrow. She beats him fairly handily and without much effort. And then Zeus suddenly shows up and he's like, hey, so, I got this necklace here for you. And, if you take that, it's the third part of the Trinity along with your lasso and your bracelets. And if you take that, you get to come up to fucking, where do the gods live? Olympus?
Olympus, yes.
You can come up to Olympus and, work for the gods. And her comment is, what did I do to earn this?
Who died?
Well, she's like, I did nothing to get this. You just want me to take it. And he's like, well, what did I do to earn this? And he goes, you're my granddaughter. And she's like, okay, but what did I do to earn this? And then she decided, you know, no, I don't want it. She's like, everything I get now, I got to figure out who I am. And everything I get, I'm going to earn, which is very forthright of her.
Which is kind of, you know, if you know anything about young people, this sounds completely alien.
Well, but she's a superhero, though.
Oh, okay. So they get
so pass. Yeah, she's a better person. So meanwhile, on Gem World, Lord Opal has taken over, and I actually thought he had kind of a cool design, very heavy metal album cover design, but I thought he looked kind of cool. But it opens up with Amethyst is teamed up with Princess Amethyst. I'm sorry, is teamed up with Robin, who's riding around on a Pegasus.
Have we determined who that Robin is?
Yeah, it's Tim Drake.
Okay, because it's like, as far as I know, he was Red Robin, but for some reason why
in this he's just Robin.
Because I'm like, there was no mistaking that wasn't Damien.
No, it's not. And it's supposed to be Tim Drake because it's supposed to be the members of the original Young Justice.
Oh, okay.
So I think Superboy is Connor Kent, which they revealed in the lead end of the next issue. So it's the original team. But they just did a little bit with Jesse Hex there and her name is Teen Lantern.
I know that just does things to you.
They haven't revealed why she has a Green Lantern ring yet, because this was more of the Wonder Girl.
Yeah, well, you have that prevailing theory that there's more to her than meets the eyes, because it's like, okay, the Green Lantern Corps, you know, sometimes they're not too picky about who they get, but usually they tend to be adults.
But how many fucking, they're always adults, and how many fucking Green Lanterns does Sector 2814 need? Not this many.
Well, considering what they've done to the multiverse, I imagine,
fair enough, but they're like this time, oh, let's just give it to a little girl. And you can't steal the Green Lantern rings, as far as I know. They have to be given to you, so.
Or you can just kill them and take them like Parallax did.
Yeah, but he already had a ring, so he would have been able to do that, because he was still a Green Lantern. But if somebody else takes a Green Lantern ring, it wouldn't work for him. So, she didn't just find a Green Lantern ring, I don't think. Or if she did, then he's not paying attention. Yeah, so they sort of came together in the end, although Robin pointed out, he's like, hey, yeah, that's Wonder Girl, and a bunch of people I don't know. And they're going to go fight the bad guy, I guess. But the lead into the next issue was basically, what's going on with Connor Kent? And we don't know, because we don't know why he's there.
We don't know.
I guess Wonder Girl, she's trying to decide who she is, because after the internet turned on her for dressing like a hoe bag.
I was going to say, is that the same Wonder Girl from that Young Justice run when the New 52 started?
It was supposed to be, yeah, where they gave her gigantic tits.
Yeah, that was.
And they were like, hey, this 15-year-old girl looks like she's a 28-year-old stripper.
Why couldn't they just make her, then she wouldn't fit the Young Justice.
Yeah, exactly. She would have been too old, like Starfire in the Teen Titans.
Or Beast Boy. Beast Boy is creepier because he's a dude.
Well, and also I think he's hitting on the young girls, so.
Yeah, that's why I said it's even grosser.
Yeah, it is. Fucking creeper. What's wrong with you, Beast Boy?
To be fair, he's Beast Boy, so like, you know, he doesn't have a lot of options because he's a goof.
Well, I don't know. Some girls like that.
All right. That's going to do it for the mainline DC. Let's go into our next book, Dreaming, number 6, writer Simon Spurr, art by Beckles Evan.
This was the end of the first storyline, and it immediately went into the start of the next storyline. We never got a reveal on what Dora was, except she's not a part of the Dreaming. And her quest to get back her memories, Marv Pumpkinhead revealed that...
Great name, by the way.
Yeah, well. So, Dream, when she came in, apparently told Marv to make her a present every day. And she somehow thought these things were her memories, but she didn't know how to access them. Marv told her, no, you fucking idiot. He's like, they're not memories. They were pieces of shit that I put together and broke on purpose. He's like, his message to you was, just because you're broken doesn't mean you're worthless. And she never apparently got this message, but it did. So the two things going on in this were Kane had the weird crystal box things that was talking to him. And hatching. I don't know how you put it. It was being born. And I had surmised, well, this is a new member of the Endless. Well, the judge brought that up in this, or he's like, not going to let some new fucking Endless bastard take this place over. It's mine now. And the thing's like, yeah, I'm not one of the Endless. I'm not sure what I am, but I know I'm not that. And I'm not really here to take over, but you're bad. So we got to get rid of you. So all the Dreams teamed up to get rid of the judge, and they uncreated him. And then this this thing, which doesn't have a name, fixed everything in the dreaming and said something effective. Well, I guess by default now I'm in charge of this place, even though I don't want to be. And also I think I'm insane. And it made itself look like a small child moth.
It looked like a little chibi moth. Yeah.
It was kind of scary though. And the reason it picked this was it was searching through people's minds and it's like, oh, a silk moth. Yeah, that's, I'm comparing it to words I know, and that would be a comforting thing. And they'd quickly tell it, like, no, that's not comforting at all. That's creepy. You're a fucking bug. So it fixed the dreaming, made itself a very nice castle, much nicer than the old castle, and is going to be running the dreaming now because we don't know what Dream is doing because he's apparently just left.
Oops.
Yeah, it never. We don't know why he left. We just know he's like, yeah, so I'm going to leave for a while. It's like, okay, maybe he knew this thing was coming and he's scared. So the whole thing is now they've got, everything's back to normal except Dream is gone and there's this new thing there. And the new thing doesn't know what it is, thinks it's crazy. And that's kind of scary. But I mean, you made it look nicer than the judge did because the place looked like a shithole. So, yeah, I guess the next issue we find out what's up with that.
Cool.
I don't know what it's going to be.
We will all find out together. It's a good thing read this issue, because even though I had no idea what's going on, like you mentioned earlier, it's the start of a new arc.
Yeah, so now you could be there from the beginning.
Ta-da! I like the pumpkin head guy. He's funny.
He has a couple minis about him.
Cool.
Like fixing shit up in the dream.
He's wacky.
There's one where he's a secret agent, but he's really bad at it.
Well, would you expect him to be good at it?
No. He's bad at everything, really, except cleaning up and fixing things.
God, is he really going to go undercover as someone else happens to have a jack-o'-lantern head?
He's a very salt of the earth fella.
Oh, that's cute. Yeah. All right, that's going to do it for DC. Let's move on to our only Image book, Walking Dead 188. Writer Robert Kirkman, Charlie Ardlard is the artist.
Well, after the head guard decided to overthrow the governor, at the end of the last issue, they showed up with their own guards to arrest him. And they did arrest him. They threw him in jail. And Rick and Michonne are very concerned about this because it looks like... the Commonwealth is going to have itself a little civil war over this. And Rick is blaming himself. Like, he's like, no, it's because we came in. And she's like, you know, I've been talking to my daughter. And, like, this shit was coming for a long time.
They're like, why does this always happen to us?
Yeah, because he's like, I got rid of Dwight. So everything should be fine. She's like, no, we might have been, like, a partial catalyst. But this shit was happening either way. So don't feel too bad. And he's like, oh, we got to fix it. But, you know.
I want him to be on the side of the governor on this for some reason. Just to change it up.
Well, the thing is, she had a talk with the guard. And she's like, you know, after all we did for you, you did this. And he's like, you treated me like a fucking lapdog. You put my life at risk hundreds of times, and you never really thanked me for it. He's like, and I'm supposed to just watch out for you until you can let your fucking jerk-off son take over? Because the son is an asshole.
Yeah.
Like, he's crap, and they don't want him, and I think everybody knows it. And then she got all offended that he attacked her son. So she's like, well, it's a good thing you are in jail then. And she sauntered off, and then the other characters talk. Well, meanwhile, they had Carl and some of the others came to see what was going on because they haven't come back from the Commonwealth yet. And they ended up running into a big herd of zombies, and Princess saved them because they were not ready for all these zombies. And Carl had the genius idea of, okay, to save that guy, I'm going to ride my fucking horse into a group of 100 zombies. Surely that will work. Well, of course, the fucking zombies attack and eat the goddamn horse. And Carl has to jump away, but she saved him. And she likes Carl for some reason. and is going to go back to the Commonwealth with them, explain to him that things were getting a little too real for her. So she decided it would be best to bounce out. But they're going back. And meanwhile, they redirected the zombie herd so they get to the Commonwealth. And they redirect, and they're like, where'd you redirect them? Oh, to the old abandoned train tracks. Well, that's where Eugene and the girl he met up with from the Commonwealth were working on something. Because what happened was they had guards, but the governor called all the guards back. And they're like, yeah, you have to stop working. He's like, what, she's forcing us to stop? And he's like, no, we're all being called back. They're like, if you guys really want to, you can stay here, but you're not going to have any guards. So he's like, okay, well, we'll stay here then. Well, now he's got a big herd of zombies coming to him, so that turned out to be a mistake. We haven't had any characters die in a little while, so.
Well, Dwight died.
Yeah, Dwight died, but Dwight. I don't know if we ever had, did people ever like Dwight?
I remember I came late to this party, so I'm not 100% positive.
Yeah, I don't think people ever actually liked
but
him.
But still a death.
Yes, a death is a death. Yes. Is a death.
All right, let's move on to Marvel, but not proper Marvel, with Conan the Barbarian number 3. Yes, I didn't forget it. And art by Mahmoud Ezzahrir.
So in this issue of Conan, it's a story about young Conan.
So far it's
Conan.
Been a bunch of like independent stories with the what's the term I'm looking for with the.
Yeah, so the first story was the story of this blood god.
Yeah,
and
blood
its
god.
Follower. And we resolved that story. And then they brought it back to show that it wasn't resolved in the next issue, but only at the end. And then they did the same thing again here. So I think the next issue might close out that story.
Nah,
but
I gotta finish this. Well, it depends. It, depending on the way they want to set up the trade.
Well, what he's doing is he wants to tell Conan stories, and that's what he's doing. He's telling different Conan stories. But I guess he decided he needed something to tie them all together.
Aside from the first issue, the last issue, and then this issue is sort of a one-off story, but then they remind you, we're building something up here with these kids and the blood gods, so just remember.
But the thing is, it's like, I liked the last issue with the jungle people, the athletic people, and I liked this issue with the young Conan, because, you know, Tibernia is a big place, and there are a lot of different cultures and stuff in it. So I like those stories he's telling. The story I'm least interested in is the blood god story.
Yeah, I know. He finds a way to tell like these great little one-off stories, but, I have a problem with, a concern with this book, because, you know, this, as much as I love Conan, I don't know how much longevity it has, how much staying power. So I wonder if after the first trade, he's going to pawn this off on somebody else.
I hope not, because he seems to really enjoy it, and like he gets what he's doing. Like, in none of these comics have I felt, okay, he doesn't understand this character. He very much understands the character. And, I don't know. I hope he sticks with it. If they put another writer on it, I don't know how I'd feel about that. Well, but in this story, it's a very young Conan, and he was going around murdering people and stealing their shit. So he got arrested, but he got arrested in this mining town where, they don't like thieves.
They're like, oh, if you do a major infraction, like, you know, kill an underling or something, or kill a commoner, you go to the mines.
They called that a minor infraction.
What's that?
They called that a minor
exactly.
infraction.
Exactly. Or if you tell off, you know, a person that's well off or politically powerful, you know, they'll send you to the mines.
They'll send you to the mines, but if you do something really bad, then they hang you on this red tree.
They saved it predominantly for people that steal.
Yeah, because, and they said that there's different kinds of stealing. Like, if you steal food because you're starving, like, they can understand that. But Conan was not starving. He was stealing money because he wanted money. And that is unforgivable to these people. So they're very much against this. So they bring Conan out. to hang him, and they hang him on the tree, but they're used to hanging, like, miners and stuff. They're not used to hanging 300 pounds of muscle Conan.
No.
So they attach him to this fucking tree, and the branch breaks, and then he uses it to murder a couple of the guards. So they
That was awesome, because he's still got his hands tied around his back.
Yeah, and he whips them with the fucking... He whips them with the rope his own hands are tied with. And strangles one of them out. But eventually what happens is all the people see him escape. And they don't like these thieves. So they don't like that he got away. So all the people rush him and beat the shit out of him. And they throw him in prison. And this is kind of funny too. They send down a priest to talk to him about his benevolent, forgiving God. And he's like, well, you know, you're going to die either way. And you're probably going to die horribly. He's like, but at least your soul can be saved. So, you know, do you want that? And he fucking reaches through the bars, grabs the priest. And he's like, hey, you want this fucking guy to die? You better let me go. And he's actually kind of shocked when the leader of the guards, he's like, I know how to handle this. And he just fucking shoots an arrow through the priest's neck.
Well, to be fair, I mean, the guy who's running the prison is like, he's like, oh, you saw the Conan kill the...
Conan killed the priest.
What's that?
Yeah, he goes, Conan killed the priest.
But the idea is they don't want to let Conan out, so it's easier for them to just kill the priest.
Yeah, so they take him the next day, and he basically tells him, you broke our fucking tree, so you broke the branch off our tree, so I'm going to fucking take off all your branches. And you'll be begging us to feed you to the fucking dogs by the time I'm done. And, you know, Conan responds with, like, Crom damn you or something. So the guy goes to they stretch him. Like, they tie the ropes to his arms and legs. They got him tied to a tree, and they just stretch him out. And the guy's going to start chopping limbs off. And when he raises the axe, he gets hit by lightning.
Yeah, because he basically says, well, whatever God you have to, pray to him now because you don't have that much longer. And then sure enough, he's struck by lightning. And at that point, I was kind of thinking, hoping we get a Thor.
No, it was Conan said he fully believes this is coincidence because he doesn't believe in the gods.
Oh, and he's like, he believes in Crom, but the thing is...
Well, he believes in Crom, but he also... Crom is a god who has absolutely no interest in people.
Yeah, so it's like, he knows Crom is there, but he knows he doesn't listen, so he doesn't bother praying to him. And so... No, I was under the impression, was that just a coincidence, or was that have something to do with
it
the
was,
god?
They didn't say, but he believes it was a coincidence. But what they said was, some of the people in the town... They said on that day they started worshiping this obscure barbarian god because they like some people believed it was because he got hit with lightning because he killed the priest. And then some people believe it was because Crom was protecting Conan.
Or it could have been something with the blood god.
But it also could have been it was fucking stormy out and he raised a metal thing in the fucking air.
Well, that too.
And got hit by lightning, which is what Thor believed.
Could
he
very well be that as well.
God. Shit. Yeah, but it doesn't really matter that much. But either way, so that happened, and Conan, you know, he was allowed to leave. And then they cut to the two creepy blood god kids who have Conan on a sled full of dead people. He's at the top. And they're taking him to be sacrificed, I guess. So.
Good book. My only real, it's just nitpicking here, is it's like, well, of course he writes really good Conan stories because he wrote really good Thor stories. And, you know, Thor, obviously, it's at the core of it. He's going to be the superhero, but he's still sort of, you know, the savage guy.
He's still sort of Conan.
Yeah, basically.
Except he's nicer.
Yeah, exactly. All right, now let's talk our second non Marvel Universe book, Gunhawks, number one, writer Maria Lampert, art by Luca Pizzari.
Only one story in this.
Yeah.
This one was different, and this was a very,
I didn't much care for it, to be honest.
Very, I didn't mind it. I
breezed through it, and I'm like, okay, this is nothing great, but at the same time, you know, considering how high Soul set up, these 80th anniversary books, I found it kind of, lacking.
What can you do with a Western, though? I've already seen The Searchers, and nothing's ever going to be better than that in Westerns, so you can't really do much else. Like, this one was about a guy who he was a mercenary, and he fought in Mexican Civil War, killing Pancho Villa's guys.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the little missions he went on, kind of shit went bad, and they basically murdered an entire town, which is bad. He didn't feel good about it, but now he was like the sheriff in this new town, and he had his lady there, is gonna be the school teacher of the town and stuff. But when he's out in the desert, he gets attacked by these women, and he kills two of them, but the third one gets away. So he rushes back to the town to find out where his woman is, to make sure she's all right, because he thinks they're going to be coming again. And blah, 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 blah. The one woman is there with her La Parca face paint on. And
Day of the Dead.
Like. And yeah, but it's...
No, nothing about it makes it La Parca.
Yeah, it's a skeleton, and she's Mexican, although she spoke perfect English.
Well, as far as we know.
Yeah, it's fine. But she explains what happened and what a shit piece of crap he is. And then he's like, you know what? Because he feels bad about what he did. Like, he never felt right about it. And he basically says, listen, if I go with you, will you leave them alone? And she's like, well, yeah, I'm not a fucking lying pig like you are. So he's like, okay. So he goes off with her to be killed, presumably. And that was the end. So I wouldn't say it had a happy ending.
No, but none of these books
He kind of came to terms with what he did and realized he couldn't come to terms with what he did. So.
Cool. Sorry, it seems like I don't know how much to say, it's because I don't have much to say.
Yeah, it was very much a simple Western story.
Yes, exactly. All right. I don't know why I can't find this on Comic List, even though we read it. Marvel's X-Men. Well, I scurry to find the creative on this.
It starts with Age of X-Men. Marvelous X-Men. So I'm just going to spoil it right now. I liked both X-Men books we read for completely different reasons.
Well, because they're both different teams. I mean, the one is... The
well, this is a different X-Men reality.
What's that?
So, this is a different reality also.
Oh, this is why I couldn't find it. It was under Age of X-Men, the Marvel's X-Men. Let me put over the creative on this real quick. Lonnie Nadler, and art by Marco Falla.
Yeah, so this one is... the first of what is going to be many Age of X-Men mini-series, and this one is about the team of X-Men. I could go through and list them all, but it's fucking...
You don't really have to.
They're a group of X-Men. By the way, as they're walking along the hall showing pictures of all the X-Men teams, the only person who is on every team is X-Man.
Hmm.
Because he's fucking in charge of this world. And they show that a couple different times. One of the times they show it is X-23 is on the team. And when they're, like, going out to... There's, like, a fire and they're saving people.
The woodland creatures. There was a cute little moment where Nature Girl's talking to Colossus and she's like, oh, so-and-so thanks you for your help. And he's like, who's that? He's like, oh, the rabbit.
Yeah, it's like, oh, that black-tailed hare there. And he's like, oh, okay. And she ends up keeping a bear that she finds.
Yeah, and I like at the end of this book, she's just dancing with the bear.
Yeah, like the bear's like rolling around and she's playing with it. He's a member of the X-Men now.
Oh, awesome.
But this issue did a couple things. It developed the world more, and the way the world is it has, X-Men has instilled this, like, in an effort to, so he apparently determined one of the big problems with the world was, it was the fact that there were mutants and there were humans. That was a problem. There were two separate groups.
Yeah, you know, if you had a kid, there was a probable chance it could either be a mutant or just a regular human.
Well, no, not that. It was just that.
Well, I'm tying the two together. I presume there's a
yeah. But because there were these two different groups, they would join together with their own group. So he's created a world where it's like this ridiculous individuality. Like, you can't have sex because you can't be in a relationship with someone else. Because then instead of being an individual, you would be a group of two. So he's taking individuality to a ridiculous level. I can't believe he's allowing the X-Men to work together as a team.
Yeah, because when you think about it, it's sort of defying his underlying logic.
But they were very clear to point out that, did you notice what was different about the way the X-Men lived?
Oh, they all lived in their own homes.
Yeah, they live in like a cul-de-sac, but they all have their own houses. So they all live separately. They don't even live in the same house. Like, they don't live in the X mansion. They live in an X neighborhood where they all have their own houses, which was subtle. They didn't point that out, but I thought that was interesting. When they started explaining it later, I remembered when they all came out of their own houses, and I thought that was actually kind of cool. So, but they're getting these messages from Apocalypse, from Ensop and Nur, who's telling them, like, hey, he's basically saying, hey, it's okay to fuck and have friends and stuff. Like, you should come to us. It's where the good shit's going down.
You know, when you think of Apocalypse, you think love.
Well, no, but.
And I wonder if he's ultimately going to be, like, good, but because X-Men is so evil that even though he's somewhat corrupt, it's like just comparing the two.
X-Man isn't, he's not really evil though. Like,
there was that one instance with, where he's talking to Laura and he's like, oh yeah, you had a sister.
Yeah. But what I'm saying though is he's evil in that he's basically mind controlling everyone, but he has created a utopia.
Of sorts.
Like, of sorts, yeah. Like, this is on a technical level a perfect world. Like, everybody is happy. Everybody is, they're mostly free to do what they want as long as it doesn't involve anyone else. But no, one of the things they showed was, you know, pushing forward the this guy ain't right was, I imagine it's because of the healing factor, because Wolverine had kind of a weird thing with mind control too, where like it didn't always work right on him.
Well, because it wasn't in what's the name of that one big crossover that Bendis did?
Age of Ultron, Avengers vs. X-Men,
House of M. Wasn't he one of the people that wasn't affected by the new reality?
I don't remember.
Okay, I believe he was one of the... I believe he was immune to Scarlet Witch remaking reality.
So that's what they're... So that might be what they're doing with it. But she was like, when they're having the fight, like, she's remembering her and Gabby. And she's talking to X-Man about it. And he basically contrasts their upbringings. And she's like, wow, I can't believe we've never done this before. And he's like, well, yeah, we can't because that would have formed a bond between us, and we can't have that in the New World Order. And then he's like, well, I just want to let you know, Gabby is real, but you can't see her. And she gets really upset, and she goes to kill him, and then he erases her memory. Like, right there, and she just walks away. And, like, goes into the house, and they show her later, and she has no memory of this. And that's what he does. If anybody breaks out, he redoes their fucking mind, so they don't remember. And it's, this is a different kind of, you know, bad utopia. I can't recall ever seeing this one done where, because the more common one is, you know, they remove individuality.
Yeah, and, so, and the thing is, people are openly, you know, undermining whoever's in charge, whereas this, aside from Apocalypse, everyone seems pretty content with what they have.
Yeah, but I mean, they don't know any better, so.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I thought this was a good book, like you mentioned earlier. You know, since we're talking about it already, let's just bump it up already. Uncanny X-Men. We'll go into the review and I'll put over the creative when I find it.
This was really good, but it was also a very depressing.
Yeah, it was very. You know, I think you said it best, depressing, in the sense that, you know, it's just this really sad story of just the remaining X-Men, and everybody else is gone. Yeah. It seems like humanity's all but made mutant kind extinct.
Yeah, and I told you, like, how are they going to do an X-Men book, all the X-Men are dead? Well, yeah, all the X-Men are dead. Like, in this world, they actually are. And this is the current world, apparently.
Yes,
like they're actually dead.
This is current 616, yes.
Yeah, and the they've made a cure for mutants. Like, if you're already a mutant, you can't be cured, but they can, you know, parents can now get this thing, like a drug that they take, and it'll mean their kids can't be mutants. Mutants are kind of, it's not going well for them right now. Because people have strong, like they said, some countries are making it mandatory that people take these drugs, and
or
mutants are like getting
they
fucking lynched
them.
And shit. Like it's bad. It's really fucking bad. And Cyclops is pissed off about this, and he goes to this rally, and he does meet up with what's her name, Blindfold. He does meet up with her, and her power is she can, like, fucking see the future, which is horrible. So he goes to this rally of this anti-mutant person, and he brings up, she's giving her speech, and he's like, hey, what about, like, the fucking mutant kids who are getting murdered because of your bullshit? And her response is like, well, how many of your children have gone to school and fuck killed everyone or whatever? And he starts arguing with her, and then they're like, hey, fucking mutie lover. And they start beating the shit out of him, and they knock his glasses off, and he's like, oh, please give me my glasses back. And then he gets mad that they're hitting him, so he just starts fucking blasting off. Well, Captain America comes in, cause as it turns out, the Avengers were like guarding this thing. And, you know, of course he has to fight with Cap. Like, you fucking let this happen. All the X-Men are dead. You let this happen. And now you're providing protection for a hate rally. And he's like, I'm not providing protection. I'm trying to make sure something like this doesn't happen.
He's like, yeah, I kind of knew something like this would happen. And I'm trying to make sure there's no violence that breaks out. Or specifically, I'm looking out for you, dude.
Yeah, and so Cyclops looks at the camera. He's like, hey, you know, can I talk? And the guy's like, oh, I guess. And he's like, all right, if there are any X-Men left, come.
Because, you know, it's not an X-Men series unless someone makes a speech.
Well, this is a shorter speech, though. And he didn't talk about how terrible they all are for what they've done. He just said, if there are any X-Men left, then come to where it all started. And he means the Xavier Institute, which has been bulldozed. So he's standing out there, and suddenly the Reavers come attack. Cause of course, if you announce, like, you're fucking Cyclops, and by the way, Cyclops is a hated man. Because he died, but they still remember him as the guy who fucking murdered Professor X, who was a decent mutant, and also tried to fucking rule the world.
Well, it was more, I think people, their last memory of him was trying to wipe out the Inhumans.
Yeah, like, they don't like Cyclops.
Well, most people don't like Cyclops.
Well, yeah, I don't like Cyclops. I liked him in this issue because I at least understood where he's got
I will say this about
this
Matthew Reisenberg, who wrote this. He's found a way. Now, I'm not 100% won over, but he does.
He's made him sympathetic.
Not just sympathetic, but he's written him relatable to where I can stand Cyclops, whereas before I just wanted him to just die.
Well, one of the issues with Cyclops when they decided to make him the angry guy was, it's like, well, you could say like, oh, all these people and they all hate me and, you know, everybody else. But it's like, you also had 8 million fucking friends around you all the time who didn't hate you. So why are you always so angry?
Because his wife is dead.
Yeah. Well, yeah, now all of his friends are dead. So he really has no one, and they hate him even more now, which, you know, partially due to his actions, but also because people are even more anti-mutant now. So, you know, him being angry makes more sense now, I think. So he's going to fight.
Better written than he ever was by Bendis.
Yes. He's going to fight the Reavers, and then Wolverine shows up, OG Wolverine, and, they, you know, take him down together. So then we go to another story,
you brought that up. I love the main story in this. The art by Salvador Lacaro was really good.
Salvador LaRocca was an old X-Men artist who was very, very good.
Yeah, he's very, very good. My only critique of this book was, and it's advertised as a special oversized issue, was had this been just the end of the book, I would have been perfectly fine.
Okay, I didn't like the Wolverine story, but I liked the Blindfold story.
But the thing is, okay, especially the, like, you like the Blindfold story. And even though that was the better of the two backups, I'm like, okay, this sheds some light, but really when it comes to the overall narrative, like, these stories didn't need to be told.
Well, they kind of did, because they had to show how Wolverine got involved. And that's what they did. Like, the Wolverine story covered a lot of the same ground, but it was because Wolverine was following him. Like, Wolverine was tasked with protecting Cyclops. And so he was at the event, and he talked to the Avengers before this all happened, during that. And he knew he was waiting in the trees when the Reavers attacked, because he'd been following Cyclops. But he also talked to Blindfold, who Cyclops talked to. And she was kind of, I'll wait until we get to her story. Because the end of the thing was, she was laying in a bathtub and she cut her own wrists.
Yep.
So, yeah, that happened. But so Wolverine's talked to her too, and she was being very mysterious with him. And, you know, Wolverine basically went to protect her. Multiple Man is also involved, because, like, he was there, but he also just wants to hang out with his woman and their kid. Doesn't really want to get that involved in this stuff, because it's dangerous to be a mutant, especially if you have fucking M tattooed over your eye. Like, it's not a good time
Dead
to be out.
Away.
And he's also making many, many copies of himself just to be safe. But yeah, so Wolverine followed him, and then they cut to the Blindfold story, and she, her story sucked, because they kept, as it's going on, they keep showing her, because she could see the future, and they keep showing, she's seeing herself getting the shit stomped out of her.
Yeah, she's wearing her X-Men uniform, and there's like a mob, and they're all just stomping and walking all over her.
Yeah, so she's seeing this while she's just living day to day. And, she basically what happens is, she knows that's going to happen to her, so not wanting that to happen, she ends up killing herself.
Yeah, she's like, look, I realize things aren't looking good for mutant kind, and things aren't particularly looking good for me. She's like, I just want to have a nice house, and then just die in it.
She didn't outright say, I want to die in it, but she... And she didn't tell anyone she was going to die. But I also don't know if she knew she was going to kill herself, because her thing was, she was talking about how the problem with being able to see the future is it kind of takes away your ability to choose.
Yeah.
Like, cause if you know what's gonna happen. So I guess she decided, fuck it, I'm not gonna let that happen. I'm gonna kill myself. Which was horrible. Like, she killed herself because she thought her life was gonna be much shittier than that. And she didn't wanna go through the things she saw her going through. So that was very sad. And like, they could have done this story without that. But, I mean, I don't know if it was like we have to raise the stakes on this and show why it's...
Yeah, just to show how... I think they had to show how bad it was.
Yeah, I guess, but yeah, you're right, because that shows that it's not just bad now, it's going to get worse.
Yeah, and the idea is, you know, you don't need a wacky X-Men team of Cyclops, Wolverine, Multiple Man, and Blindfold.
Blindfold. Yeah, that wouldn't be the best team ever.
No.
Yeah, but a very strong issue, a strong start to the story. And it's, you know, both the X-Men stories are this kind of oppressively dark story. This one more so, cause the Age of X-Men stuff, it's like at least some people think they're happy. But in this one, it's like fucking nobody's happy. Except the people who get to murder mutants.
Exactly.
They're happy.
Well, then, yeah, they're excited that Cyclops, you know, is pretty much the last mutant. Well, until Wolverine came up.
Yeah, and it's... Yeah, there's still a lot of mutants. It's just the X-Men are dead.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to our next book. Daredevil number 1, writer Chip Zdarsky, art by Marco Ciccone. Ciccetto? There we go.
I wasn't expecting this from Chip Zdarsky.
Yeah, the thing is, I was sort of dragged into reading this, kicking and screaming, because ever since his Howard the Duck, Chip Zdarsky has been kind of hit and miss. More misses than hits, actually. So when, you know, he's going to be putting Daredevil, and Charles Soule's coming off his run, which that didn't set my world on fire either, so I wasn't too excited for this book. But I read it and I thought it was pretty good.
It was, and what I think he was trying to do with this was he did something to highlight like absolutely every aspect of the Daredevil character except the lawyer part. He didn't do anything with him as a lawyer, which I like because
the thing is, how do you follow up the actual lawyer writing Daredevil?
Well, yeah. And I guess that's what it was, but they always do the lawyer thing, so he actively avoided that, but the Catholic thing, he played up to that really strong. The conflicted thing, he played up to that. The kind of a fucking player that bitches dig, he played that up. So he had all the other character traits there. But there's something going on with Daredevil. In that he's not 100%. He almost got killed by 3 bank robbers, or by 3 just, they weren't even like professional thieves. Like,
yeah, they
3 guys knocking over a store damn near got Daredevil.
Yeah, and it wasn't like they were like, oh, well, they had some state-of-the-art weaponry. No. It's just, no, just a bunch of guys who were knocking over a liquor store.
No, and he was questioning, like, as he's getting the shit kicked out of him, like, how much time do I have left doing this? Like, am I getting too old? Am I too broken down to do this? Cause remember, he has the radar vision or whatever the fuck, but he doesn't have superpowers. So he's kind of questioning that. Well, the bigger issue is one of those guys he was fighting, he fucking killed them on accident, but he apparently killed them. Massive head trauma.
Yeah.
So he was laying in bed all fucked up, and Mayor Kingpin got the report, and he's fucking smiling because he's like, I fucking got him now. I got him because he fucking killed someone. And he's just very happy. He's also brought in a new cop from Chicago who ain't putting up with this vigilante shit.
Yeah, because it was great because this is following Charles Soule run where, you know, Kingpin made all superheroes illegal, but the cops, you know, at the beginning of this, they're like, yeah, you know what, it seemed like a good idea, because they're vigilantes, but the fact of the matter, they're superheroes, there's nothing you can do, they're gonna keep doing whatever they wanna do, so, you know, Daredevil showed up, but like, okay, yeah, we ain't catching him, so let's just move on.
Yeah, but this guy's like, no, we ain't doing that shit. Like, we're gonna get these, but he beat the shit out of this guy and apparently killed him. And all he was doing was robbing a store. So, that's no good. Yeah, so that's a new character. And then, yeah.
That was pretty much the gist of it. And then, you know, obviously he goes to confession. That's the one thing they put over in this book, his relationship to this priest, which I did kind of like because it showed some continuity.
Well, yeah, because he's always been a Catholic, and that's why he's so conflicted all the time.
Yes, exactly.
He's Catholic, and he's got to feel guilty about everything.
Exactly.
Sorry, Catholics.
I think they're used to it by now, so.
I feel bad though because I do shit on the Catholics a lot, but it's like I'm fucking Lutheran.
I think their depiction in the Daredevil book is the least of their concerns.
No, but it is very accurate. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to go into this, you know, step by step, but it hit all the points and it was a good start to a Daredevil story, and the art was good too. Mm-hmm.
All right, and I didn't mean for this to be the last book, but it's the only book we have left, and I was going in alphabetical order. Immortal Hulk, number 13, writer Al Ewing, art by Joe Bennett.
So let me tell a story, guys. So Tony tells me, he's like, hey, somebody was putting over this Immortal Hulk.
A lot of people have been putting this Immortal Hulk over.
I'm like, yeah, but it's on issue 13. He's like, yeah, but it's Marvel. They have the recap pages. And I'm like, yeah, but that doesn't really give you a full sense of what's going on. And he's like, well, let's read it. And I'm like, fine, because I'm not going to fucking veto his pick. So I'm like, fine, I'll read it. And I open this fucking book up. And I don't know what's going on. And I start flipping through the pages, and I realize there's no recap page.
Yeah, it's the thing is, for like 99% of Marvel books, they do the recap page because it's the one thing they do that DC doesn't. And I really like that they do that because the idea is, well, any book in the series could be someone's first. So let's give them a recap, even though 99% of people reading it already reading it and they know what's going on. But let's put that in there because I like it because sometimes I'm like, I don't want to wait for an issue one or I don't want to wait for a beginning of an arc to finally decide to read a book. So they have the recap. So I'm like, oh, perfect. We can pick up Immortal Hulk. It's going to be like every other Marvel book where we can just read the recap and then we'll know exactly or have a good idea what's going on.
But that didn't happen, so we didn't know what was going on at all. Hulk, everybody was a Hulk monster. As I joke to Tony, I have no idea what's going on in this, and he's throwing in like fucking Kabbalah shit. And like, I really don't know how that's related. Like, maybe Bruce Banner is a Jew and I was unaware of it. I don't know, but they're just cutting this shit in. So I'm doubly confused now. And apparently like Hulk's dad is there and the Hulk and Bruce are separate people and they're in another world, but they have to go back to the world together. And Hulk can talk normally, by the way. And there's a guy with no eyeballs. I think Rick Jones was there. Maybe he called Betty. I'm sorry. I don't know what happened in this book. Hulk fought a monster.
He fought a series of monsters.
And then he saved Bruce Banner.
Yeah.
They were on another planet, I think. Or in another dimension.
I'll do my research and then I'll decide and think twice whether or not I want to pick this up again.
I will say I don't get the sense this is badly written.
Yeah, that's the thing. I've heard so many people putting this over. It's like, well, I figure it's going to be like most Marvel books where you just pick it up, but apparently it's not.
Yeah.
It was heavily dependent on you reading the other previous 12 issues.
Yes.
All right. That's going to do it for this week's book. Let's move on to our final segment, next week's books.
Next week's books.
Alex, I don't really question your selection of music. This is a good song for his character, but I wouldn't call this a good wrestling song.
Oh, but it's, I love Regal, and it was his best song.
Yeah, but at the same time, you can't be like, well, this is a good wrestling song.
It's perfect for his character.
Yeah, it's perfect for his character, but if you're listening to a vacuum, like most of the people listen to this podcast, it does nothing for them.
Unless they got a deal with it.
Yeah, exactly.
Motherfuckers.
All right, let's look at next week's books.
Okay. Batman Who Laughs, number 3.
This storyline is winning me over.
Okay, well, it's 6 issues. Flash 64.
I did the cooking show thing where I was flipping through and
Wonder Twins number 1.
Really?
Mark Russell's writing it.
Oh, I thought Bendis was writing it.
No, Bendis isn't writing any of these books. Mark Russell's writing it, and I like Mark Russell.
Okay, I'll give it to you.
It's only six issues.
When I heard they were doing the Wonder Twins, I'm like, oh, it's going to be a comedy book, right? And then, no, it's a straight book. So I assumed it was written by Bendis, so I'm like, I'm not reading this.
It's not by Bendis, so I'll read it. Criminal number 2.
Ooh, I all but forgot about that.
I remember. I'm looking somewhat carefully. Middle West is not coming out, but a second printing of the second issue is, so that's a good sign.
Yeah, good for Scotty. Yeah.
He's got a little bit of a hit on his hands. Age of X-Men Next Gen number 1. That
is this where we find out what happened in Glob's head?
Huh?
Is this where we find out what Glob was thinking?
Yes, and Ed Bryson's writing this one. So, I'm excited to read that. Uh-oh.
What uh-oh?
Avengers No Road Home number 1.
Do we have to?
It's Al Ewing.
So Al Ewing, yes he was. He was doing this, that Hulk book.
Yeah, but this is number 1.
Okay. Fine.
Dead Man Logan number 4.
Read that book too.
So lucky you have me.
Oh yeah, thank you, Alex. I don't know what I'd do without you.
You fucking miss books. Wait, they're doing another Conan book?
Yeah, I
Somebody else is writing it, okay.
It's Jerry Duggan.
Nah. Why do they need 2 Conan? They're like, well, the first one worked.
Yeah, it sold so well, they decided to crank out a second one. And Alex Ross did the cover. It's really cool.
Yeah, but do we want to read another Conan book?
I don't particularly want to, but at the same time, if you pick it, I'm going to be like, well, it makes sense. The first Conan book's good.
You know what? Let's try it just in case it's good.
Okay.
But I don't need to read that much Conan. Have we been reading Thor?
We picked up 2 issues ago, but we skipped the last one.
Okay, well, this is Road to the War of the Realms. And the cover is amazing.
Let me see.
Thor and Odin sitting on a broken rainbow bridge drinking beer.
Is it beer or is it mead?
It's probably mead, but... So I want to read that. It sounds cute.
Yeah, Thor and Odin, you know, contemplating the end of everything.
And that's it, by the way.
No Star Wars Count Dooku?
No. Those Star Wars books are terrible.
It's true. Alright, that's gonna do it for this week's show. So from all of us at HabGuard.com, thanks for checking out this week's show. And as always, check you guys out next week. Adios!